Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of Football Unscripted on the Pit Talk Network. I'm your host, Corey Cohen, and we have a very special episode for you today. It's all about the Panthers and the NFL draft. Specifically, though, the two Panthers drafted to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Kalijah Kancey in the first round, Servacio Dennis in the fifth round, both headed to Tampa Bay, and especially Kalijah Kancey, a big deal for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers organization. I was thrilled to have on David Harrison of the Locked on Bucs podcast for a great conversation, talked all about what he thinks, where he thinks Kancey will be able to slot in, same with Servacio Dennis, what the Bucs are going to expect of them, what fans are expecting, how they envision them at that next level, the changes they're going to be going through. Really, really interesting conversation that I'm excited for you to all hear. So that will be the episode for this one, all about Kalijah Kancey and Servacio Dennis being drafted by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Hopefully coming up next week, we'll have a more all-encompassing episode about the Panthers drafted into the NFL, what it means for them and the different spots that they have. So we're looking for that hopefully next week. But for now, please enjoy my excellent conversation with David Harrison of the Locked on Bucs podcast. Okay, we are here with my guest, David Harrison, from the Locked on Bucs podcast to talk about the Pitt Panthers drafted to Tampa Bay. David, thank you so much for joining me. I appreciate it.
No, I appreciate the invite, Corey. How are you?
Doing well, and thrilled to talk to you because Pitt and the Buccaneers now have a bond. They are now tied together in the fate of two players, but especially one. And we're going to start with him. That is Kalijah Kancey, the star Pitt defensive lineman who was the first round draft pick for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in 2023. Went 19th overall to the Bucs. Pitt first rounder since last year with Kenny Pickett, who is looking to be the face of the franchise for the Steelers. First Pitt draft pick on defense since Aaron Donald, one of the best defensive players in the history of the NFL. So, you know, pretty big honor for Kalijah Kancey going first overall. There were a lot of comparisons to Aaron Donald at Pitt, not quite at the same level, but certainly the best defensive lineman since Aaron Donald. Now, for Pitt fans listening, they've been watching Kalijah Kancey for the last few years. For you, when you're focused on an NFL team, obviously you're not going to be in tune with every player. So when Kalijah Kancey gets drafted to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, what's your first impression of him? I assume not knowing a ton about him.
No, I was really excited, and I have to first off admit that I was excited for partially selfish reasons. For most of the offseason, everybody has been mocking an offensive tackle to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in the first round, and for very good reason. They let go of Donovan Smith, their veteran left tackle. The expectation is that Tristan Wirfs, their all-pro caliber right tackle, is going to move over to left tackle. I actually had the Bucs team reporter on my own show for our Friday episode, and she more or less confirmed that expectation is what is being expected inside the building as well. So, you know, regardless, when you have one all-pro tackle and then a bunch of backups, you essentially have no tackle on one side of the line or the other. So Darnell Wright was a very popular name. But as we all saw moving up, you know, actually once we got closer to the actual NFL draft, Darnell Wright's popularity and his stock essentially shot through the roof, and all of a sudden he's a top 15 pick. And if you're the Buccaneers sitting at 19, that's a problem. So, you know, when I sat down to do my only first round mock, I did, a bunch of Buccaneers mocks. I also cover the Commanders. So I did a bunch of Commanders mocks, stuff like that. But I only did one full first round mock. It dropped the morning of the first draft or the first round. Again, reading just the reports and the rumors and what to believe and what not to believe. I had Kalijah Kancey number 19 to the Buccaneers. So I feel very good about being one of the only people to do that. And really, at the end of the day, it's about what the Buccaneers brought him in for, and that is to fix. I mean, you know, we can be nice about it all we want, but it's to fix their pass rush. This is a Tampa Bay Buccaneers defense that, you know, in 2020, when Bruce Arians and Todd Bowles and the entire staff showed up, didn't have the greatest pass rush. They got a little bit better during that first year, that was 2019. But then in 2020, that defense really turned a corner and really kind of took the image of Todd Bowles and what he wants in his pass rush and his secondary and all those things. And a lot of credit was given to Tom Brady, a lot of credit given to Bruce Arians. But really, if you go back through that postseason run, it's the defense and it's the pass rush. Yeah. And then 2021, it kind of took a hit. There were some injuries. You know, there were some players that didn't really kind of perform as much as they did in 2020. And this is really a three-year mission now for the Buccaneers to reinvigorate that front seven pass rush. And Kalijah Kancey is just the latest part of that. And everybody is super excited because there's this kind of sense that, you know, Joe Tryon-Schwenka didn't really do it. Logan Hall didn't really do it. Now there's this feeling of like Kalijah Kancey, but this is going to be the guy that helps fix that Bucs pass rush.
That's really interesting. Well, first of all, congratulations on the vindication. It's a sweet feeling to get something like that right. It's interesting because, as you said, this is Todd Bowles' team. And we saw what he was able to do in that Super Bowl run. And as you said, obviously Tom Brady is the golden boy. Everyone credits him. But that defense was phenomenal and a massive, massive reason. I would even argue a bigger reason. Obviously Tom Brady is really important. But without that defense, I don't think they can win that Super Bowl. I think that defense really stepped up big time in the same way that a contemporary of Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, we saw when he went out to Denver. It was the defense that really carried that team. And so we know how important the defense is in Tampa Bay. Yeah. We know how important the defense is to Todd Bowles specifically, now the head coach. And I think it is really important to build from that. And one thing, Pitt has also had a similar mindset in that the coach of the Panthers is Pat Narduzzi, who they brought over from Michigan State as the defensive coordinator. He's a defensive guy. And specifically on defense, the defensive line, his whole thing is it starts in the trenches. Yeah. And so defensive line has been his bread and butter. And even though Aaron Donald was just before him, that has been his priority. And they have had some phenomenal guys come through that defensive line. Kalijah Kancey, as I said, the best since Aaron Donald. He is a beast. And I really think he's going to be able to bring a big step up into the NFL because he, to me, in many ways, is similar to Aaron Donald in that the only downside is his size. And that was the thing with Aaron Donald, who I believe went drafted 14th. And it was largely because they said, oh, he's undersized. We don't know if he can play defensive tackle. He might be a defensive end. But and just based on purely on the size, and then he gets to the NFL and he proves people wrong. And to me, that's the same thing with Kalijah Kancey. He's not at the level of Aaron Donald. To me, Aaron Donald deserved to win the Heisman his senior year at Pitt. But for Kalijah Kancey, you just look at what he does on the field. He gets after it. He is a baller. He is a beast. And if the only downside is he's a little bit undersized, and I think he's 1 inch shorter than Aaron Donald. You can work around that. I don't think that is necessary. I don't think that's going to define him. And it's interesting to look at the defensive line, and there are questions: is he a D tackle? Is he a defensive end? I mean, to me, that's the one thing I'm not entirely sure where they'll slot him. What's your read on the Bucs defensive line currently, and where they think they'll have room for Kalijah Kancey?
Yeah, so he's going to primarily be a three tech. You know, that's what the Buccaneers are going to do with him. So they've got Vita Vea, their nose tackle. Todd Bowles is an odd front guy. You know, if you want to go the traditional route of it, it's a 3-4 base defense, but really doesn't matter if it's 1-3-5 down defensive lineman. Todd Bowles, he's an odd front type of guy, and he really likes to use that defensive line to get penetration themselves. Yeah, help stop the run game, of course, but also open up the lanes and really absorb the blocks and force the offensive line to basically give lanes to outside linebackers like Shaquille Barrett or even off-ball linebackers that are coming on blitzes like Devin White and Lavonte David. So with Kalijah Kancey, you pretty much expect him to come in, fill that three-tech role, which is the role that in previous years has been filled by Ndamukong Suh, specifically during the Super Bowl run and the year following. And then they had another veteran, and I apologize to him because his name is escaping my head right now, but he's no longer with the team. So Kalijah Kancey is going to be expected to kind of fill that route. And I think that's kind of the plan. That's been the plan all along, kind of watching what Kalijah Kancey can do and watching a little bit of Pitt film. You know, my co-host and I on Locked On Bucs, we each took two games, one from 2021, one from 2022, because we not only want to see what he can do on the field, but we also want to see kind of what the differences are from 1 year to another. And something that I noticed about Kalijah, like you said, he is a little bit undersized for traditional defensive linemen, whether you're interior, exterior, You either want more length out of a guy that small, or you want more girth out of a guy that short. And he doesn't have either. But what he does have is this amazing ability to just control the gap. And that doesn't necessarily mean he's always getting into the backfield, but you don't always have to get into the backfield. We've seen reps where this guy gets double teamed in the A gap, and he holds both of his blockers in cement. You know what I mean? Neither of those guys can move to the next level. They can't get off of him and move on to another block. So you got one guy eating two linemen. That gives you the opportunities for guys like Servacier Dennis, for example, to come free and to be able to make the play. And at the end of the day, a good teammate, which I believe Kalijah Kansi looks like on film, isn't going to care who made the play. And when you watch him celebrate his own sacks and you watch him celebrate a teammate sack, the celebration level is the same. And that tells me that this is a guy who's more worried about the defense standing up than Kalijah Kansi standing up. And you know, he'll eat when he needs to eat, but he'll also facilitate his teammates. And that's exactly what the Buccaneers defense is going to preach. But also, Todd Bowles is known. I mean, I've seen Todd Bowles line a safety up over the nose. You know what I mean? Like, that's insane. And I've seen cornerbacks play, you know, play defensive end for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I mean, Patrick Mahomes, that's one of the things in that Super Bowl that he really wasn't prepared for. There were snaps where they brought both of their perimeter corners in on motion as basically defensive ends standing up on the sideline or on the line of scrimmage, and he had no idea what to do with that type of look. So when you look at a guy like Kalijah Kansi, this opens the door for more even front sets. You could see Vita Vea and Kalijah Kansi both. You know, Vita shifts off the nose, Kalijah reduces inside into the A-gap, and you have those two guys, and now you've got guys like Logan Hall or maybe a William Golston if they bring him back to man the defensive end spots, and now you've got a more traditional 4-3 look, but it's super athletic, and the way that Kalijah Kansi can shoot the gap is just, it's amazing to me. Both of us watched games and came in with observations. We watched completely different games, didn't cross notes, but we both had the note that there were reps where this guy shot through a gap before the two linemen had even moved out of their stance. And to me, that is absolutely amazing. So something that we're preaching to Bucs fans, and I know the Buccaneers have said multiple times, is his size is only going to be a problem if it's a problem. And right now, from the level of competition he's played in, it is yet to be a problem. And with Todd Bowles' tutelage, Kalijah Kansi, again, the apparent team-first focus that he brings to the team, and then also playing next to a guy like Vita Vea is absolutely going to help. I don't expect it to be a problem in the NFL.
Yeah, that's a really good point in that, first of all, as you just said, being next to Vita Vea, he doesn't have to be the big bruiser. He doesn't have to be this giant guy anchoring at that nose tackle position. So in terms of where he's drafted, the situation, which is obviously so crucial, more important than everyone always says this. It's not where you get, it's not when you get drafted, it's where you get drafted. So it's not, are you even the first round, the second round? Obviously the money's part of it, but it's really about where is going to be the right spot for you so that no matter what happens in your first contract, you earn a big second contract. You earn a long NFL career because you're able to showcase yourself at that first place. From everything you've said, this seems to be a phenomenal spot for him in that, again, Vita Vea, big guy, he doesn't have to be that, Kalijah Kansi. Mm-hmm. And his size, it's almost a benefit in terms of the versatility that he can bring. So he can play inside, as you said, in a more traditional thing. But also Todd Bowles, he can be mad genius. He can move people around and he can, you know, he can give opportunities for Kalijah Kansi in other places. And then Kansi can, as you said, swallow up two offensive tackles and then give room for a linebacker to come in. And it really seems like, yeah, there's going to be a lot of opportunity just based on that kind of defense and the opportunity that he's in. So it really does seem like, if for Pitt fans listening, this seems like a phenomenal spot for Kalijah Kansi to go, where, yeah, he's in a great position to be able to showcase himself. And as you said, the only weakness is size. That's not necessarily a huge deficit with this kind of defense. And Aaron Donald, again, the comparison, obviously you can't change height, but he did put on a good amount of muscle after he went to the NFL. And so that is something that a player can change. I would not at all be surprised if Kalijah Kansi in the next couple of years really starts bulking up, if that's what they want from him, because he, you know, again, Aaron Donald, similar kind of profile. And he is now, I saw a picture of him the other day on Twitter. I think like the Rams tweeted it out, him in the weight room. That is, it's like inhuman how just massive he is lifting these weights, and he wasn't that out of Pitt. So there's definitely a chance for Kalijah Kancey to become a bigger guy and become more muscular, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, I was talking to, and this is a little bit off topic, but it's going to make sense once I get through the whole thing. I was talking to former Washington Redskins cornerback Fred Smoot when the Commanders took Emmanuel Forbes. Again, I cover both the Buccaneers and the Commanders. And, you know, the knock on Emmanuel Forbes is his size. He's got massive length. He's super athletic, but he is real thin. I mean, if I remember the data correctly, no cornerback has been drafted that weighs under 170 pounds as high as he has, at least since 2000. And really, you could probably go beyond that as well. And none of them have really had productive NFL careers. But again, it's only going to be a problem if it becomes a problem. And something that Fred Smoot said to me when we're talking to him is that people have to remember that he himself, and, you know, Fred Smoot's not a Hall of Fame guy. We all know that, right? But he had a good NFL career. And he himself came into the NFL, quote unquote, undersized, underweight for his position. And he said, it's amazing the things that can happen if you have the right mindset, the right people talking to this kid, and you get out of the cafeteria. Like, you're not on a college campus anymore where you're eating college food, you know, and don't get me wrong, college staffs have nutritionists and doctors, and they're telling these guys, like, this is what you need to eat, but it's still college cafeteria food. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He said two things.
Schedule-wise, right? Like,
and schedule-wise.
You have to balance class and practice and this and that, and you don't necessarily have time to make nutrition your number one thing. When you're in the NFL, that's your only responsibility. That's your only job, is to focus on football.
Yeah, 100%. And that's something that Fred said. He's like, something that comes with going to the NFL is, yeah, you get that check, but you also get what he calls stakes and weights, right? So he gets more time to work out, more time to focus on his body construct, and he's going to eat better because he's making good money. He can afford to go out there and eat better nowadays. And I think that's something, you know, and again, it's a little tongue in cheek, right? But it makes a lot of sense. Cause like you said, like Kalijah Kancey, now he's got access to a state of the art medical facility, workout facility, training facility 24/7. Like, if he wakes up on a Wednesday morning during the off season and says, man, my calves feel really tight, he can drive into Tampa, go to One Buck and get a massage or get stretched out or get some physical therapy going or whatever he needs to get. Now, again, is he as a player going to take advantage of all these things? Well, that's going to be the big question, right? But again, it all just kind of goes back to the whole aspect of, yeah, it's only a problem if it's going to be a problem. And he's not the first player to come into the NFL who's got the undersized tag on him. And obviously the Buccaneers aren't worried about it, because not only did they draft him undersized, but they draft Servasio Dennis, who is quote unquote undersized for his position as well. So, you know, the aggression, the burst, the electricity is what they're after with these two guys. That's what they've got. That's what they expect to accentuate. So, you know, it's all about just trusting the process and understanding what they have in the skill sets.
Yeah, and that's a great segue into it. Is there's definitely a theme in these two draft picks that they take out of Pitt, and that is both of these guys, yeah, they're undersized, but you look at their game film from college, you look at their leadership, and they just have that high engine. And they are determined players. They're both great leaders. They were both great leaders at Pitt. And so there's definitely that similarity between those two guys. It's not surprising that one team, what they see out of Kalijah Kancey, they also see out of Servasio Dennis. And so let's talk about Dennis. Again, the similar kind of thing. He's a playmaker. He gets after it. Yeah. He's not on the defensive line. He's a linebacker, but he is undersized. He's not great in coverage. He's definitely a for certain situations when you need to get after the quarterback or blow up a run play or something like that, he can charge in and break through that offensive line. What do you see out of him in terms of, obviously the expectations aren't going to be as high being a fifth round draft pick, but what do you see out of him in terms of maybe where he could slot in and what expectations you have for him and you think the team might have for him?
Yeah, I think he's going to be the third off-ball linebacker on the depth chart, right? You have Devin White up front, and then you've got Levante David right there next to him. Really, KJ Britt, the guy that they got out of Auburn a few years ago, has been kind of the number two off-ball linebacker. He's had some struggles in actual game action when he's gotten in with the defense, mostly a special teams contributor. So I think Servasio Dennis has a really good opportunity to come in and kind of grab that third off-ball linebacker job behind Devin White, behind Levante David. And the interesting thing there is both of those guys are in contract years, right? Levante David signed a 1-year deal to return to Tampa this offseason. Devin White is now infamously combating or combative about his contract situation. He wants an extension before the season starts. The team says they're not going to do it. They're going to watch him play, and then they'll decide what to do at the end of the year. We'll see if anybody blinks, and if so, who it is that blinks first. But the likelihood that there is a job to be had in 2024 for Servasio Dennis is certainly there. And yeah, he's brought in immediately for that aggressive style of play, that willingness to hit, that electricity that you just kind of talked about, that leadership. I mean, the Buccaneers love team captains. I don't know an NFL team right now that really doesn't, but that's certainly something that attracted them to a guy like Dennis. And, you know, it's, again, it's going to be kind of where does he develop in relation to the coaches. You know, ever since the Bruce Arians crew came in, they're really big on their coaches being teachers. It's not enough to just say, Servasi, look, when that running back comes out on the wheel, we need you to take this kind of an angle and anticipate it this early and be able to see it because of these keys. They expect their coaches to not only say that's what you're supposed to do, but here's how we want you to be able to recognize it. Here's how we want you to get better at that. And really the biggest case study that this defensive staff can hang their hat on right now, and he's not going to have the same position coach, granted, but it was really sparked by Todd Bowles himself, is cornerback Jamel Dean. You know, non-Buccaneers fans aren't going to remember this, but in Jamel Dean's rookie season, there was a game against Seattle Seahawks where he got absolutely torched. I don't know the exact stat line, but it's something like 6 catches he gave up for about 200 yards and like 3 touchdowns. And I'm a little bit exaggerating, but I'm not really exaggerating. And I remember saying on the Locked On Bucks podcast that for a young cornerback like that, this is the kind of game where you're not sure if he's going to bounce back. You're not sure, like, that's the kind of game that could literally ruin a dude's career as it's getting started, right? Because that's such an ego blow. And what the reports were coming after that and what we're finding out from one Buck is that Jamel and Todd are staying after, they're staying late together, and they're watching film. And Todd is sitting there next to him and saying, look, dude, here's where you messed up. Here's where I want you to get better. And we have seen Jamel Dean grow to the point where coming into this offseason, he and their number two, technically their number two cornerback, Sean Murphy Bunting, were both up for contracts. The Buccaneers retained Jamel Dean. They allowed Sean Murphy Bunting to walk in free agency. That's how far he has come, is that now he is the number two cornerback for Todd Bowles on that defense. Servasio Dennis is going to have that same opportunity. Come in with the natural ability, the raw skills, the electricity, the energy, the aggression that you play with, but also come and learn from these teachers. And if he can do that, look, the biggest knock on Devin White is his inability to cover. The problem is when you watch Devin White from his rookie year to going into his fifth season, and, you know, we'll see what it looks like this year, there's not a lot of differences in the way he attacks his coverage ability. So what that tends to signify is you have a player who is, we know this coaching staff teaches. So if their teacher is teaching, the student is not learning. And for one reason or another, it's just not clicking. That's one of the reasons he doesn't have a new contract yet. That's something they want to see out of him before they commit to him long-term, is that ability to become a pass covering linebacker. Make no mistake about it, they ask their linebackers to run, defend, and pass rush more often than a lot of other defenses do. But you do still have to be able to cover in the pass defense game. That's something that Devin White has not been able to do yet. If Servasio Dennis can come in, learn those skills, put some effort towards that, and become a better, don't have to be the best, don't have to be even be great, but just become a solid pass defender, especially against running backs coming out of the backfield, then he's going to carve out a role for himself in this defense.
Yeah, really interesting, because there were two things there. One is talking about the opportunity this year, but moving forward, where if Devin White, as you said, the two guys in front of him, they're on one-year contracts. And so they're on the last year of their contract. So there could be a situation where if Servasio Dennis can prove himself, even in somewhat limited scenarios this year, yeah, that gives the team the confidence to next year say, okay, we're not going to give Devin White this huge contract. We can let him walk because we've got Servasio Dennis. And then he can expand his role moving forward. I think that's definitely a nice opportunity to sort of give him a year to prove himself and show what he can do, and perhaps give the team confidence that he can be a number one or a number two guy in that spot. And the other thing you mentioned is the culture in terms of coaching. And I do think that's really important in terms of, obviously, part of it of going to the NFL is going to be the culture of being in the NFL, culture of a new location. Although for Kalijah Kancey, he's from, not from Tampa, but he's from South Florida. He's from Miami.
Right.
And so he's going back to his home state. Culture-wise, in that aspect, it's you know, kind of perfect. But yeah, it's part of it that where you're going and being in a new area is going to be a factor. But a lot of it, I think, is just the culture of the coaching staff and the culture of the expectations and what they want out of you. And it seems so similar both in Tampa Bay and at Pitt. And it's actually really interesting that the Pitt had four players drafted in the first five rounds of this NFL draft. And they had someone in the sixth and someone in the seventh. But four players drafted in the first five rounds. Two of them went to Tampa Bay. Two of them went to the Jets. And in both cases, there's a similar kind of culture with that defensive-minded head coach, Robert Saleh in New York, and then Todd Bowles in Tampa Bay, and really making that the primary focus. And how in both cases, that matches up, as I mentioned earlier, with Pat Narduzzi and that mindset of, you know, these aren't guys that were going to be drafted to Kansas City. For instance, these are guys who are going to these places where they value defense. And even more importantly, they value ballers on defense, and they can work with the other things. They can work with size. They can work with weight and athleticism, and the coaching staff can explain, here's what we want. And they're confident in that coaching staff in Tampa Bay that any deficits in terms of, say, pass coverage with Servasi Dennis, they can help him teach that. They can help him learn how to do that. But they want to look at game film and see guys who just have an instinct at how to get after it and have a high motor. And that's the case with, it seems, both Kancey and Dennis.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think the great thing, too, if you're coming into the NFL with any type of doubt around you, and you mentioned Kansas City, I'll be honest with you, if Kalijah Kancey lasted to the Kansas City Chiefs pick, I'm pretty sure they were going to take him. And that next to Chris Jones on that defense, that would have been a nightmare for anybody playing the Chiefs to deal with. The great thing about the Buccaneers coaching staff that I really like about them is that they're willing to be wrong, right? And that is something that not every coaching staff is willing to be. And you know, there's enough Patriot bashing out there in the world to fill a lifetime. But like Bill Belichick is the kind of guy who doesn't like to be wrong. So if you don't come in and fit kind of what he envisions for you to be on his team, he just gets rid of you, right? Where the Buccaneers, they came in and you take a guy that they drafted just last year, Luke Getteke, who came in, he was a right tackle in college. He comes in, they're like, no, we want to put you at left guard. So they let him compete during OTAs, rookie camp, training camp, all that as a left guard. He doesn't win the starting job, but because of injury, he ends up thrust into the starting job. And let's just put it kindly, he had a terrible, terrible run as a left guard to start his career in the National Football League. Now, the Buccaneers eventually said, okay, you know, enough is enough. They pulled him off. They put another guy in there and said, hey, look, you just got to stabilize this as best you can. You know, if you watch the NFL, you know the Buccaneers offensive line wasn't the greatest last year for a lot of different reasons. But now this year, his second season, a lot of times you say, okay, well, this dude's career is done. He's going to go down as a wasted draft pick. You know, you don't really call him a bust because he's a mid-round guy anyway, but, you know, he's just going to be a wasted pick. But instead, the Buccaneers relooked at him and said, you know what, dude, we're going to give you some run at right tackle next year. So he's been preparing this offseason. He's coming into OTAs. He's coming into training camp, competing, not just to play right tackle in the NFL now, but start at right tackle. So not only are they not holding everything that happened against him, they're actually giving him a brand new opportunity, wiping the slate clean, and say, look, let's reteach this thing. Let's reanalyze this thing. And let's see if we can use your skills in a different position in a different way, because we are the ones who made the mistake, not necessarily you. And I think that's a great thing for an NFL team to do. Now, Kalijah Kancey can't move to off-ball linebacker, right? And Servasi Dennis isn't going to move to defensive end. But if the things aren't working that they need them to be able to do right off the bat, this is not a team that's just going to say, okay, Kalijah, you are too small, dude. Sorry, it didn't work out, and just cast them aside. No, they're going to work, and they're going to try to figure out how to make this puzzle happen. So, you know, if you're a Pitt fan that's not a Bucs fan, and you just kind of loosely pay attention to your players in the NFL, like a lot of college fans do, and you hear early on, oh, Kalijah Kancey, like first five games, no sacks, only three pressures, and, you know, he's just not getting a lot of penetration. Doesn't mean he's a bust. Doesn't mean the Buccaneers wasted him. They have the ability and the willingness, what I think was more important, to adjust, say, okay, that didn't work. Let's find a different way.
Really interesting. So, yeah, it's, I mean, Pitt fans, they're going to be following the Bucs closely, especially with Kalijah Kancey and also Servasi Dennis. Pitt fans love the guy, and they love both of them. So it's going to be a high priority. And there are a lot of Pitt fans who aren't necessarily tied to an NFL team. Obviously, there's the Steelers connection, and now with Kenny Pickett, but a lot of Pitt fans either aren't from Pittsburgh, or for whatever reason, they don't root for the Steelers. They don't like the Steelers, and so they do just sort of follow their guys, and so they'll follow they'll root for the Cardinals with James Conner, and they'll root for the Bengals with Tyler Boyd, and the Bills with DeMar Hamlin, and now the Bucks are going to be on that list where people are they rooted for the Bucks when Jordan Whitehead was there, and so
Love Jordan. I was incredibly upset when he unfortunately left, but
yeah. So we did another podcast. Talking about the Jets, the players going to the Jets and Jordan Whitehead, who's already there now. And so that's going to be the case where now when the Bucs are on, Pitt fans are going to be watching that defense and they're going to be rooting for Tampa Bay. And so that'll be really interesting to see with this NFC South that's pretty wide open, obviously a new quarterback in Tampa Bay, new quarterback in Carolina. I mean, everything seems to be wide open. So the expectations seem to be pretty high. This isn't a team, an organization that's rebuilding. And this is a 3-year project where you're sort of just waiting for that top team to die down. And no, there's an opening there. Any one of those teams has a chance. They were one game apart last year between first and fourth. So anyone has a chance. Tampa Bay is really going to be going for it. What do you expect out of the team this year? And with Kancey and with Dennis, what do you think they'll be able to contribute to this team's goals?
Yeah, I've got Kancey slotted in as a starting three tech next to Vitavea on the defensive line. Greg Gaines, former Rams defensive end, came over in the offseason as a free agent, is the other defensive end that I have penciled in. And then Tervase Dennis, first off-ball linebacker off the bench, to contribute to the defense, which means he will get some snaps, but primarily a special teams guy with the potential, like we talked about, to become a starter in the near future, possibly the next two seasons after his rookie year is done. That's kind of what I expect from them right off the bat. As far as the NFC South, I mean, the Buccaneers could win the thing. They could finish dead last. And I think you can say the same thing about every single team in the NFC South. So it's going to be hectic, but it's going to be a lot of fun to cover because all of that unknown really it drives fans crazy, but from a media aspect it really keeps everything incredibly entertaining. And yeah, Servassier, I mean, just talking about him, both my co-host and I, when we watched our games, we both commented that there were several reps that we had to go back and watch, because as we're watching the rep, all of a sudden we realize we're watching number 7 not number 8. And you know, that's not a dig at Kalijah. It's an example of just how much Servassier pops on the film. So that's a great thing. You know, we're working through the other Bucks draft picks first, but once we get to the off-ball linebacker position, I can't wait to get more Servassier Dennis film digested, because again, like I said, watching Kalijah, I've already digested some of it.
Right.
There was a hit that he and another Pitt player laid, I think it was in the Syracuse game in 2022 that I was watching, that he and a teammate just collided on this, I think it was Syracuse receiver. And I just feel bad for that receiver, but it was one of the cleanest, most efficient hits I've ever seen a linebacker put on a guy. And to say that guy is undersized, hey man, you might be undersized, but those hits hurt just as bad. I promise you that. So actually, I think it was Syracuse. But anyway, so yeah, super excited for these guys. Again, how the Bucks are going to do. Look, man, there's people inside the Buccaneers organization think Baker Mayfield could be their starter for the next decade. We'll see if that's true, but that's gonna have a big part of this. But we're super excited about this draft class, super excited by both these pick guys.
Yeah, it's gonna be really interesting. I mean, there's different philosophies in terms of drafting and who the kinds of players that you take, and sometimes teams will take someone who didn't do much in college, but they've got size and they project that they're going to be really good. And they say, oh, he's really athletic. And we saw that even last year. This is a totally different position, but like Malik Willis, Pitt fans were hearing this similar kind of thing last year of Malik Willis he can become a top quarterback. He's got the size, the athleticism, the speed, all that. Yeah, we didn't really see much from him in college, but we can project that he's going to be great. Meanwhile, Kenny Pickett was someone who did a ton in college, was a Heisman finalist, but there were, you know, some questions about his hand size and stuff like that. Well, right. A year later, Kenny Pickett's the starting quarterback for the Steelers. Malik Willis is like a third string already. So it's interesting that these different philosophies in terms of who, when they're actually on a football field, can really show out. And then you worry about the other stuff when you get there. With both of these players, Kalijah Kancey and Servassier Dennis, the one thing you won't have to worry about if you're a Tampa Bay Bucks fan is these guys, they go all out. They and when you look at the game film, they have been great players. Sure, there might be some things that don't translate as well to the NFL. We'll see. As you said, size is a problem, only if it's a problem. Yeah. But the number one thing, in my opinion, that you're looking for when you're drafting a player is what did they do on the football field? Because that's one thing with every single player. They go to college, they spend 3 years there. What did they do actually in between the sidelines? Both of these guys were phenomenal players and leaders, I should say. And so in that case, I think Bucks fans should be excited. And from everything that we've talked about, I think Pitt fans should be really excited that they've ended up with the Buccaneers, because I think it's a really good spot for both.
Absolutely. Yeah, we can't wait.
Well, David Harrison, thank you so much from the Locked On Bucks podcast. Again, really appreciate you coming on. This was really fun.
Yes, sir. I appreciate the invite.
All right. Thanks so much. And we will be back next week talking a little bit more about the NFL draft as a whole here on Football Unscripted. Stay tuned. Thank you so much for listening to this episode on the Pitt Talk Network.